right here, right now. Every day, CIUT 89.5, the sound of your city. Toronto.
This program is sponsored by A Different Book List. Located at 779 Bathurst Street, A Different Book List is an African-Canadian-owned bookstore specializing in the rich literature of African and Caribbean diaspora and the Global South. For more information, visit www.adifferentbooklist.com.
Good morning. Welcome to CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto, the Taylor Report. I'm Phil Taylor, your host, and obvious matters to talk about today. The first one on my mind is disinformation that coming from all Western capitals. We are being sealed off, basically, from the Venezuelan opinion, or we're being told what it is by people who have an vested interest, particularly Marco Rubio and the President of the United States, who have done something unspeakable and now want to pretend that everything is going to be fine. So it's not going to be fine. I want to mention off the top, because it's important people react to this development of U.S. Illegal and blatant aggression against Venezuela, violation of the U.N. Charter, et cetera. There is a demonstration I'm aware of today at 12 p.m. At the federal building in Hamilton, and across the country, actually. Various peace organizations, in this case, the one I'm referring to, 12 o'clock at Federal Building in Hamilton, is the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War. And people always ask, which war? Well, this one. It's very important people react. Problem, and again, I'll go back to my main point, which is you want to remember that when the U.S. Engages now in any military enterprise, and they do it all the time, actually, but they, according to the doctrine, the military doctrine, U.S., it is almost as important to control information as it is to function or carry out missions on, I guess we characterize it as a battlefield. And that's is taking place here. This situation is actually, we were talking about it last week on the show, the danger of, is now very, very explicit, because the United Nations could actually have total malfunction. There is a meeting of Security Council today, and of course, be advised that we're living in now in a minute-by-minute world where you have to be, if you want to know what's going on, you have to be actively following every nuance from different quarters. But Venezuela will be at the Security Council meeting. It may be going on as I speak. We'll update ourselves. The issue is a kidnapping of a president of Venezuela, and it is a sovereign country. What that means is it's not your country. It means that, for example, that Mr. Carney wants to have an opinion, as he seems to have, about the domestic affairs of Venezuela. He has to be reminded that even though he's in the Anglosphere and they're used to and they use words like Western, and they use words like hegemony. Venezuela is not Canada, and he could not possibly know, other than what his intelligence people tell him, about the domestic affairs, and it isn't his business in the first place. We're seeing carried out what Chrystia Freeland of the previous Justin Trudeau's government has been working at. Canada has been conniving at the removal of the Venezuelan authorities for many, many years. Canada was a initiator of the Lima Group, which sought the overthrow and removal of the Venezuelan government way back. At the first meeting of the Lima Group, the one that was most widely publicized, Chrystia Freeland was there with the then president of Chile, and he's now in prison in Brazil for trying to overthrow his government, and he was a close, his name is Bolsonaro, he was, he is Donald Trump's friend, but the Chrystia Freeland was an active, visible, memorable figure in the working at the undermining of a government which had taken control of its resources, which it still maintains, so as to benefit the people of Venezuela. The only way the empire, and Canada's a standing early member of the Western Empire, the only way they could deal with that is to destroy, if they could, the Venezuelan economy, which has been ongoing. And when they do undermine the economy and do every kind of illegal manipulation, playing with currency, playing with the international funds of a government, if they have any success at all, they immediately say, you see, these people can't govern themselves. Yeah, well, you froze their account. The British froze the account of Venezuelan government. And thanks to Chrystia Freeland, thanks to the Liberal Party of Canada, they delivered those funds to a man named Juan Guaido. By the way, where is Guaido? Isn't he? Canada said he was the president of Venezuela. Trudeau sat with him, and they smiled at each other, and they said, this is the president of Venezuela. Incidentally, when they did that, that was grounds for them also to use violence against the Maduro in the past of Hugo Chavez. Because if you say that's not the government, this is the government, then you have freed yourself and your partners to destroy whoever happens to be in Caracas, because you've already said they're not, that isn't the government. That's a war policy. At the time, when they were just flying back and forth, the violence, there was some violence, by the way, attempts to bring down the government. But when that period passed, we forgot that we, Canada, had set the groundwork for what is going on right now. This idea that you can delegitimize, by the way, it's a represented at the United Nations. Again, it's a sovereign. Venezuela is a sovereign country. The resources of the country belong to the people of Venezuela. We've just been told by the President of the United States they do not. Mr. Carney hasn't said there's any problem with taking the resources of Venezuela. Not a problem. His only issue, and he's issued two statements so far, and of course, Minister Anan issued a statement. the first thing in the Anon statement was that there is that Canada doesn't recognize, never did recognize, Maduro, and then followed by a couple of paragraphs about we would like to see everything taken care of calmly and without too much fuss, and that we believed in international law, that international law should apply. Apparently, I bet the phone rang because Carney came out with a really insulting, I guess would be the word, piece of writing. He said that Maduro was a narco-terrorist, whatever, all the words that Trump requires of people, and that then that and again that but of course but we believe in this. They use this formula, international law, where they have their paragraphs upside down. The first paragraph has to say that international law has been violated by the United States, that you can't kidnap the leader of a sovereign country and on your domestic charges. This is beyond belief, as it should, and Canadians are reacting, I believe it's apparent, that given the threats against Canada, given the threats against Denmark, that it is understood that what is the issue is not whether or not a leader has had allegations made about him by foreign parties who have no jurisdiction and no right to be talking, actually. Whether that kind of thinking is going to prevail, or we're going to say, no, we insist on the United Nations Charter, of which, and Canada loves to say it's a founding member of the UN. So let's be very clear and point out that Mexico, by the way, is taking the lead, and Mexico is being threatened. The UN Charter, Article 2, says that all members of the United Nations are sovereign, and that force and threat of force cannot be used by one member against another. And that this is Article 2 of the United Nations. I urge everybody to read it. This is what the president of Mexico said. By the way, I was struck by the fact that she started with principles. She didn't talk about whether she likes or does not like a government, because that's not relevant. What she started with was, this is it's Article 2 of the UN Charter. This is what makes the UN function successfully. And when it's violated, it puts everybody at risk. And now we have a situation where that has to be underlined. The fact is that I just mentioned, Mexico is being threatened. Cuba is being threatened by the United Nations, by the United States. And so the Security Council is meeting. It'll be very interesting to know what's going to be said. I have, as of last night, I read the UN representative of Venezuela saying that he's going to call on members to correct the situation, return President Maduro and his wife to Venezuela because they were kidnapped illegally by a member of the United Nations. The United States doesn't own the UN. I know it behaves like it does, but the states within the United Nations are equals. So Venezuela is calling for the return, and the interim president, Ms. Rodriguez, has clearly stated Maduro is the president, remains the president, and that he has to be returned to the country. And, of course, some kind of sanction has to be brought against the U.S. For its conduct. The watching this, let's run down. I should mention something. I mentioned Carney has made the kind of statement that you expect now, since our elbows are in our hip pockets, and we're not any longer, the whole idea of any kind of resistance here has been abandoned. And now the language will be, any critical language directed at the U.S. will be temporized and halting. I don't think that matches the mood in the country. And I think we should recognize and applaud the New Democratic Party for making a statement that this was a violation of the U.N. Charter, that it was behavior that Canada rejects, and it can't be business as usual, this idea has to be challenged, that the U.S. has a unilateral policy and all that. At any rate, a very good statement from the New Democratic Party. The Bloc Québécois has issued a similar statement, and incidentally, that's a change for the Bloc Québécois because really, since the time of René Lévesque, they have been tended to try to stay clear of international issues. I will remind you that René Lévesque, when he was the leader of the Parti Québécois in Quebec, and there was an incident, similar incident, of imperial power being displayed. The British sent its navy, Britain sent its navy under Margaret Thatcher to what they call the Falklands. And it was very interesting that the Canadian English, I guess, well, let's see, the rest of Canada, let's call it, English-speaking, referred to the issue in dispute. Argentina had exercised its sovereignty over the Malvinas Islands and pointed out that Malvinas actually is Argentine territory. And Britain sent warships. They sank the Belgrano, 600 sailors of Argentina died. And René Lévesque spoke up, and actually he was rather, well, he gave a history lesson. He said Malvinas are actually, the original name was Malouin, because it had once been territory of France, but and condemned the British. And when the Canadian media talked about it, they used the word Falkland. So that was it. The Bloc at that time was led by somebody who was bright and had an internationalist and progressive attitude on particularly questions of colonialism. But since that time, the Bloc has, the Parti Québécois and the Bloc have tended to stay clear of international issues. But this one, I think, is hitting very close to home because Canada's sovereignty is in question, and Quebec has a special relationship within Canada which turns on the word sovereignty, respect for its culture, its language, religion, etc. And so the word sovereignty has more weight now. And I think that the Bloc Québécois realizes that they can no longer just put this matter aside. At any rate, they made an excellent statement. You're all aware of Mr. Poilievre's statement revealing that anything Donald Trump wants, he should have. And I'm sure that I doubt that's going to do much for his career, because Canadians are actually quite concerned about sovereignty and particularly issues of minerals. Donald Trump's explanation of himself is that if the United States needs something, they're going to get it. And so if they need our portion of the Arctic, they will take that. If they want particular minerals, they will take that. And I suppose they'll appoint a prime minister who says, go ahead and take it. And we're happy to help out. That would appear to be the game plan. So we've had those statements. Now, the other really important ones, of course, Spain has strongly denounced this action by the U.S. Greece has done so. It's quite interesting to see what France is saying. Macron is doing his usual mealy-mouthed approach to things and has not condemned it. The action, but the two most powerful parties, the biggest, largest parties in France, who overwhelmingly outnumber Macron and his group, the party of Marine Le Pen and the coalition led by Mélenchon, have both called it a violation of the UN Charter and said it can't be, this behavior cannot be tolerated. In the case of Le Pen, her phrase was, the issue around the UN Charter doesn't turn on this matter of whether somebody has policies you don't like or you consider them criminal. All that is beside the point, because the sovereignty is the sacred question. And she was just striking because Le Pen at one point was considered to be a Trump ally or potential one. It's clearly not the case any longer. Mélenchon accused the Americans of once again behaving like an imperialist power. And so this is very significant. Yes, Russia has said it is a violation. They're at the Security Council today. It'd be interesting to hear what they have to say. China has said this, and they, of course, point out, and this is probably the most important things for listeners to CIUT, that what's at risk now is wider war, greater, because the U.S. defining itself as a unilateral, a one-only, America-first state puts itself above the United Nations and flagrant violation of its charter. You could look down the road and say that if this comes to further international action in resistance, it would not be a surprising outcome, to my mind, if Trump and his group were to leave the UN. I think that's very much a danger. Because they are following policies in every quarter of the world where they are usurping the duties of the United Nations. We talk about it in relation to Gaza. Trump appoints himself the arbiter of what will happen to the Palestinians and to Gaza. And he does that as a party in an alliance with Israel. And UN has to stand by and watch this happen. UN personnel were removed from Gaza because Israel and the United States thought that was okay. Well, the people of Gaza are at risk, and UN is being muscled out of the picture. There was a confrontation, and it's an ongoing one, in Congo, where Rwanda and Congo are allegedly coming to some understanding. And who is in charge? Donald Trump. And not only is he in charge, he has a command performance. He says, come to the White House. But the leader of Congo shows up, the leader of Rwanda. And then he has a photo op, and he says, see, I solved that problem. Of course, by the way, you will notice that it was a nice photograph, but the problem has not been solved at all. The fighters, all the armed fighters, are still in the field. But what has been happened is that the United Nations has been taken out of the picture. So there is this international reaction. There's talk about the World Cup being canceled. Well, why would that happen? It would happen because if there are countries that Trump is threatening. He threatened Colombia today. He called the leader of Colombia, of course, a cocaine addict. It's very interesting. This has always been true of U.S. policy and actually imperial policy. When they have a challenger, when they have someone who stands up for his country, or the country does itself stands up in the sense of saying, we will not take dictation, they are immediately called criminals. They did this when the United States did this when they attacked Nicaragua many years ago. I don't mean more recent, but in the 20s, they murdered the leader, Sandino. Sandino is one of the greatest figures in South American history because he said that U.S. imperialism has no right and can't dictate to us whether we develop or not. And they can't bring their mining companies into Nicaragua and dictate to the government of Nicaragua what it will do. So the Americans called him a bandit. When they had to deal with Pancho Villa, who was functioning along the northern border of Mexico and the U.S. border, he was called a bandit. Whenever they have a political opponent that will not do as he's told or she is told, then they are called bandits. Trump said about Mexico that the current probably the most popular president in Mexican history, Ms. Sheinbaum, he said that she's not in charge of the country, that the cartels are. And the U.S. has said that wherever they have a drug issue, they have this idea that they can enforce American laws on sovereign states. And Mexico is in violation of U.S. drug policies in that they will do, if Mexico says we're handling our own problems and the way we need to do, they U.S. said, well, no, that's our problem, so we're going to do it. And what they mean is they're going to take back what they think they lost in the 1930s when the president of Mexico nationalized Standard Oil. And there was nearly a war. It just happened to be a fortunate time for the American people that they were led by Franklin Roosevelt, who didn't believe in always intervening. I'm not saying he wasn't prepared to behave like an imperialist, but he didn't see the need for, and thought it was not a good idea to try to use force on Mexico. That's, by the way, again, this is what we're really talking about, and if you look at it historically, is U.S. has never felt that it has to actually abide by any laws other than its own. They violate their own constitution when they intervene in other countries. But this has been their history all along. I mentioned Sandino was hunted down by the U.S. Marine Corps in cooperation with a reactionary minority. And incidentally, there are always a traitorous minority in every country happy to cooperate with anybody because it might bring a few dollars and make them rich and powerful, whatever. And so there are such people, but there are not very many of them. So they did that to Nicaragua. And, of course, the one that I think everybody might want to pay attention to in history and is that is relevant to today's crisis, because it's from the godfather of the American right wing, a modern era, Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan had exactly the language of Donald Trump. And he's used the expression, which has become part of American parlance, America is back. We'll go into that a little bit about what they mean by that. But in 1983 and 84, Ronald Reagan mined the harbors of Nicaragua to try to bring down the government. They were supporting a reactionary armed group. Incidentally, one is bound to appear now in Venezuela. But in the case of Nicaragua, Ronald Reagan mined their harbors, and ships were damaged. And the idea was, of course, a blockade, which would cause an internal crisis and bring down the government, the Sandinistas government. You notice the continuity. They had killed Sandino years before, and then a healthy, vibrant, popular armed movement called Sandinistas grew out of the blood and remains of Sandino. And they took power, and they reformed the country and began to make it a government that served the people of Nicaragua. A poor country, but if you look after people, you cooperate, everybody can have a good life. They won't be at Mar-a-Lago style life, but they'll have a life. So the Sandinistas had a government, and the Americans organized a group called the Contras, and then they contributed to the Contra effort by mining the harbors. I repeat that because Nicaragua took the United States to the International Court of Justice, the only really valid international court. I hate to ever link the words International Court of Justice with this thing called the ICC, which is a cobbled together instrument that has caused a lot of bad, hasn't had any good results at all. And it is not all members of the UN are part of it, because they saw that this could be an instrument of Western power against them. But going back to the International Court of Justice, they found the United States guilty. And actually, the U.S. had to retreat on that front because the UN body set up in after World War II, the finding was too strong, and the mines had to be removed, and it was an embarrassment to the U.S. So this policy was Ronald Reagan initiated. He's going to just mine the harbors because he felt like mining the harbors. Another product of that, of U.S. imperialism in South America, was that a man named Noriega in Panama, president of Panama, was overthrown, captured, kidnapped, by the way, kidnapped, just like Maduro. He was kidnapped. And what was his crime? Well, what do you know? They said he was dealing in drugs. They said they had charges against him in the U.S. And that he was, so this is not new. This is exactly what they said about him, about Noriega. And what was it that Noriega had actually done that caused the United States to attack? And this, in that case, in case it was not a kind of a whiz-bang commando operation, it was a U.S. invasion, with leading to thousands of deaths of Panamanians and the capture of Noriega. But Noriega explained very clearly to a famous journalist named Mike Wallace. You could actually look it up. You can watch him being interviewed. He died in a U.S. prison. Noriega said, well, the CIA contacted me, and told our government that they were going to, they wanted to build a training base in Panama to prepare people, Contras, for attacks on Nicaragua. And he said, we can't do that. Panamanians will not want a CIA military installation in Panama whose function would be to overthrow a fellow South American, Spanish-speaking, Catholic, etc., country. And so he said he refused. And he said they told him, well, you're telling us no. So this is our last conversation with you. Then he read about himself in the papers, and they said, he's a drug kingpin, and we're going to take him. And they did. So they go back. That's Ronald Reagan. And that's, incidentally, in American, you know, the political spectrum in America didn't make a lot of noise, because actually, you know, the problem is if you're all in the same car and they're passing around the stolen goods and it reaches you, you don't say no. You say, oh, that's not too bad. Well, that comes from those minerals we took in Nicaragua. That comes from those minerals, oil we took in Venezuela. That comes from what we took in Cuba, et cetera. So they're not big difference of opinion. But my point is that this has been the history. But it really begins with the U.S. Capturing the Spanish Empire, what was remaining of it, at the turn of the century, when the United States assisted rebels in Cuba and Puerto Rico as a friend to remove Spain. And so when Spain was gone, it turned out the United States had arrived and didn't go away. And of course, they're in Haiti. The United States Marines have been in Haiti off and on ever since the 1910s or so, and they've always reserved the right to go. And what are they doing? They're always peacekeeping. They're always bringing a little order, etc. So this has been their history. I think we'll take a break. I want to talk about where this all comes from in the modern period, but it has a lot to do with the Vietnam War and Ronald Reagan. We'll be back in a moment.
Go in the sweet baby's arms. Go in the sweet baby's arms. They ran at night while I was lying in jail. Walking in the streets with another man wouldn't even know my bail.
Forever sweet baby's heart, forever sweet baby's heart. Lay around the shack till the bell rings black and roll ever sweet baby's heart.
How about that for lack of continuity? It's nice to hear from Flattened Shrugs just to lift the spirits. I wish we had 24-hour coverage. I'd like to be, for CIUT listeners, be able to follow what's going on at the UN Security Council and to get all the latest word from around the world as to people's the reactions. I'll remind you again that Hamilton, coming up in about a half hour, maybe 20 minutes, they're going to have a demonstration at the federal building, 55 Bay Street North, protesting U.S. Kidnapping and just attack on Venezuela, illegal violation of the U.N. Charter, clear as can be. And, of course, the existential problem that this is being carried out by a government which is proud to flaunt and ignore international opinion, even in its most sacred place, the United Nations. And I'm going to say again that we've already been talking about this, but actually, the signs of war, real war, not the kind that 300,000 Canadian volunteers running about with rifles are going to have anything to do with, but real war. And so unless the major powers can pull themselves together and force go back to policy of peaceful coexistence, which is used to be a nice term. I don't hear a word about it anymore, but you're going to need to hear the words because otherwise you have these places where the events are taking place which cannot be corrected short of war. Frankly, Canada is committed to war at the moment in Ukraine. They and the others, there are possibilities for a resolution, but if the resolution is to be dictated by one side, then there's not going to be a resolution, and it will be wider consequences. But last week on the program, we mentioned Somaliland. Israel has recognized Somaliland. And the strangeness there is that Israel itself is a somewhat compromised entity because it doesn't recognize either the Palestinians, but the United Nations does. The United Nations clearly and unequivocally, and even Canada, joined in on that point. There is a Palestinian people, there is a Palestinian state. And so this government that doesn't recognize its closest neighbor, the Palestinians, is now recognizing, it claims the right to recognize Somaliland with the two points, very obvious ones. One, that they're going to put themselves on the Red Sea, opposite Yemen and other areas. It's a choke point for the Red Sea. Everybody always uses the word, so we'll join in a choke point, and they intend to place themselves there. There's talk that they might transfer the Palestinians of Gaza there. I don't think that's the number one issue. I think the main issue is that they want to exercise alongside their friend and sponsor, the United States, extending their power and reach in that region. Then we have the issue of Taiwan, where Japan has decided that it's going to get outside its own neighborhood where and break its own commitment to the United Nations of maintaining a pacifist government, a government which will not engage in armaments. The Germans are doing the same. So that's a happy picture, which everybody averts their eyes from, but at the cost of their safety. Going back to this, Donald Trump told everyone and his colleagues, "We are back," he said. "We're back." So the rest of the world wants to know, since from the point of view of the rest of the world, they hadn't ever gone anywhere. They're still, but they keep hearing that they're back. Back from what? Well, they're back from a defeat in Vietnam. Ronald Reagan made his career in saying, "We were right, and we should have gone ahead and won it." And we saw those Rambo movies. If you didn't know how Hollywood works with the U.S. State Department and Defense Department, War Department, then you didn't notice something. Ronald Reagan brought the flag back. You used to have a baseball game without putting a flag across the diamond. You used to have a football game without putting the flag across the football field. All this was because Reagan said, "We've been, the world doesn't respect us anymore, so we're going to make them respect us. We're back," he said. And they began to line up the flags. At first, it was one flag. Then there was two. Then all of a sudden, you couldn't see an American official unless he had 10 or 12 American flags. This showed they were punch drunk from the defeat they suffered in Vietnam. And matter of fact, they said they didn't. I mean, it's just a classic reactionary path, is that they always deny that they were defeated and could have won, except they were stabbed in the back by liberals or various people who didn't have enough manliness to go ahead and get the job done. And this is personified by this man, Hank Smith, or Hank whatever he is. And where he's continually talking about overweight generals and strange things. But Ronald Reagan came to power with that doctrine. It was also a racist doctrine. He opened his campaign for president in the Deep South at a place where civil rights workers had been murdered, and he, of course, pretended not to notice any connection. That was his launching the campaign. But Donald Trump was a Reaganite, and if you look at him, he's always has himself sitting in front of a photograph of Reagan. And it was Reagan that mined those harbors. And the Democratic Party, instead of standing up to that, they began to line the backdrop to wherever they went with flags. And you even had this strange man who was in the Obama administration. I can't think of his name now. But he had been a Vietnam protester. He was a Vietnam War fighter who had actually appeared in front of the United States Congress denouncing the war. And he ended up, and that was what he was known for. He said, "I'm a military guy and I oppose the war." And by the time he got a shot at, he became a United States Senator, John Kerry, he became a United States Senator with ambitions to be president. They thought the way to beat Reagan, or Reaganism, was that to say that you were a patriot. So then he ran as a decorated officer of the U.S. military. The same guy who had once appeared in front of congressional committees denouncing the war and saying that he was a personal witness to war crimes. He then said, he appeared before the Democratic Party convention and saluted and said, "Ready for duty." And they thought they were going to trump the Trump. Good joke. They were going to show up the Republicans by saying, "You see, we have decorated guys." And now you really can't have an office unless you say, oh, I was in Iraq. Well, yeah, you committed crimes there. But this, and the Democrats have answered by bringing their decorated people. It's interesting how they're locked in this thing, this mess of flaunting symbols, the flags, the big, you can't be without a flag. And they have to say that they served. And I've actually seen people being interviewed and where the interviewer says, we thank you for your service. Well, I don't know why they don't thank me. I was in the service too. But it's absurd. Who runs the country? Decorated war heroes? Is that how you decide? If you do, you're in for big trouble. But it does go back to these people who want to continually say, we're back. And you inevitably, it is, instead of learning the lesson of Vietnam, now we are back to, actually, Trump used this expression, somebody said, are you ready to put boots on the ground? And he said, I'm not afraid to put boots on the ground. Well, let's see, because at the moment, they're not putting boots on the ground. They claim they're going to be running Delcy Rodriguez. Delcy's father was tortured to death, by the way, as a Venezuelan patriot resisting a dictatorship. So she's not a little soft person. She has seen imperialism, you know, very clearly in her life. The Venezuelan people are going to be resourceful. I don't know what the leaders are going to do. But let's say, make it clear what Canadians should do. Get in line, not with NATO, not with the West, but get in line with the Charter of the United Nations and a recognition of equality of nations and the sovereignty of nations. Do what, frankly, the NDP did. Call it by its right name. It's a violation. It's illegal. And let's go the further step. And China has said this. Other states are saying it. Venezuela says it. Return Maduro to his own country. Only the laws of Venezuela can deal with any accusations. But foreign states who have a vested interest, and they say they're taking the oil, so that's called a vested interest, cannot bring up issues about alleged criminal activity of the person from whom they will profit if they can remove him. Clearly, any decent court would just toss that out and say, you're not the prosecutor. That's strictly a matter for the Venezuelan people. But that's where we need to be going. And obviously, Mr. Carney is not up to that. He's seeking to please and stay out of the way of the U.S., which is not terribly hopeful for the sovereignty of Canada. So, again, I go back to pointing out that the U.S. has done this before in Nicaragua, and in Panama. And if you throw away your principles, you're saying that U.S. gets to have hegemony. I'm going to end on a little historical strange thing here to note. The word Monroe and Monroe Doctrine is being brought into the conversation, and it really has no relevance at all because in 1820, when it was announced that they were, Monroe said that they were opposed to foreign interference, they were talking about Spain, and a leader who agreed with that actually was Bolivar. Bolivar called a conference in Panama for 1826. That's that's 6 years after the Monroe Doctrine, so-called. By the way, it wasn't called the Monroe Doctrine at the time, but they had a hemispheric conference. The United States was invited. The conference failed because not all the countries agreed because of the political nature of their leaders, their outlook. But what they were talking about was a European, primarily Spanish, interference in the internal affairs. Monroe Doctrine, so-called, didn't say we're going to enter those countries and run them because they weren't big enough to back it up anyway. The U.S. delegate arrived late for that 1826 conference, but he brought with him personal belongings, as personal artifacts, basically, delivered from the family of George Washington. And Bolivar said that he didn't feel worthy of accepting these, because his picture, his assessment, and this was that they didn't have a contradiction with the U.S. I think we should be very careful how we throw the words around. What you do have is a statement, a declaration of American power, which traces actually to 1899 or the 1900 by the U.S., that it does have the right to interfere in internal affairs, and in violation of this modern, really highly principled document called the U.N. Charter, which, if it is ripped up, and if China, Russia, others, Colombia, if the Europeans speak up, and Donald Trump wants to continue this doctrine that he will be the arbiter, the UN will come apart. And I remind you that the League of Nations came apart, and the next thing that happened was a major war. So there's not some people who left this seem to say, oh, who needs the UN? Well, all of us do, actually, because it reads out our rights as a state and people. Well, I have to thank Pedro. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5, and there's a demonstration in Hamilton just about to start at the Federal Building. We'll see you next week.